Hey everybody, welcome to Required Reading. This week we start our Stephen King month. Now, I know if you think creepy movies and kind of that hint of 80s cheesiness, Stephen King comes right to your mind too, so that's what we've decided to do all month long. So I'm just going to tell you the movies we're going to do this month. Why wouldn't I? Step number one, we're doing Christine. That's this episode. Next week we're doing Graveyard Shift. Week after that we're doing Creepshow, and then the hammer we're bringing home is Carrie. I hope you enjoy. I hope you like these. These movies are fun. We try to choose a couple classics, a couple randoms, a couple weird ones, you know. But we appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate doing what you do, and we appreciate you listening and supporting us. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. We are smack dab, in fact, in the midst of a Stephen King month. Now, this is our 10th season, so we're trying to pick some bigger themes. And so the whole month of October, we're doing King stuff. Now, if you're listening, thank you, because you survived us talking about the Stupids last week, and God help you. I don't know how we made it. I don't know how Daniel and I made it, because we haven't recorded that episode yet as we're talking. And so I assume I've survived, but we could be wrong. This could be a posthumous episode. In the meantime, we are smack dab in the middle of King country. And if we're talking Christine, I just can't drive 55. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, riffer on Cineprov and host of Myopia Movies and Required Reading in its fourth season. Mm. And on panel we have
Charlie Rose.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I had a haunted Tercel chase me once.
Hi, this is Madison, and I just wanted to say right off the bat that shitter's full. Yeah.
We are...
Oh, was it that bad, really?
No, you're fine. You're fine.
No, that was like a relief.
Oh. That was catharsis.
That was catharsis. Okay. That was like, yes, we are now kicked off on the right foot.
I'm sorry, but I've never heard anyone use the term shitter as a insult toward other people.
Neither at all.
You're a shitter. I've heard of you're a shit or you're a piece of shit or you're acting like shit, but shitter.
There's some charming moments in this movie.
Oh.
Oh my God. I texted one to the group.
Language is
we'll get to
fun
it. We'll get to
in
it.
This movie.
Yeah.
When we get to Old Man Marley, I have one of the all-time greatest quotes I've ever heard. I will also just throw out here.
I know which line you're talking about, and I already want to take a shower.
We will talk about it like grown adults and giggle. We are smack dab in King country. This is not one of those art house ones like The Shining. This isn't trash. This is just kind of in between. This is a good place to start if you want to know what King's writing is like in movie form. Mm-hmm. This is not a book I have read of his 9,000 cocaine-fueled books. I've read several of them. This is not one of them. We visit King country a lot, but this is going to be an entire month dedicated to King. Just since we're here, I'll tease him. This is Christine. We're going to follow this up with The Fog. We're going to follow that up with Creepshow, and we're going to The Hammer at the end of the month, right before Halloween, appropriately enough, we're going to do Carrie. So beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff.
The Fog was a Stephen King thing.
Yeah. It's a book of his.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, it's a little hazy.
So is The Mist.
Yes, it is indeed.
He's really into condensation, apparently.
Also cars. Precipitation. And being hit by cars, and which is also Misery, which is also Maximum Overdrive, previous episode, and Pet Sematary, previous episode. King needs to be in a compound in the middle of nowhere, but then his books would they'd be about the same, actually.
Yeah.
Madison, you're our guest. Do you want to give us a plot synopsis of this?
Absolutely. So here we go. In the beginning of this movie, we meet Arnie and his real cool friend, Dennis.
This is back in the day when cool teenagers had names like Arnie and Dennis.
Yeah. Well, Arnie wasn't cool yet. Oh. So Arnie's a nerd, but his buddy Dennis clearly gets with the ladies a lot.
He's a football star.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis fucks. Let's just go ahead and say it.
Absolutely.
He looks like young Chris Pine.
Yes, he does.
He looks a lot like Chris Pine.
He looked like Casper Van Dien to me.
Oh, we're getting spicy.
Ooh. Oh, my. So Arnie is just desperate to get a car, have that freedom, know what it's like to touch a girl's boob, like most men do when they're somehow a 25-year-old playing a 17-year-old. So anyway, Arnie and his buddy Dennis, after just getting their asses kicked by who I assume is some kind of like reject John Travolta in the shop class, they get their butts kicked. They're driving home, or Dennis is taking Arnie home, and they see this beautiful car. It's not, but they
it's
see the
a
car.
Plymouth,
yeah, it is. It catches Arnie's eye. He's got to have it. Something terrible happens as far as what's said by the old man that is selling the car. And then Arnie suddenly, kind of like the girl that takes her glasses off and lets her hair down, she suddenly gets hot. And he starts getting hot in, I guess, 1950s hot, because mm-hmm. he clearly goes back to that whole, like, grease kind of look.
Well, he starts dating the prettiest girl in high school.
He does. Oh, who I heard has the body of a slut.
Oh. She's got brains, but she's got the body of a slut.
And then Arnie's car, Christine, that he seems to form some kind of really unhealthy attachment to, in a very codependent style, starts to just lose himself to this car. The car tries to kill his beautiful girlfriend, who he does not want to call his girlfriend, though. And chaos ensues.
Beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a fantastic summary, actually.
Yeah, like a pro, like an old pro. Now, that just makes me wonder what will happen when both you and Charlie take off your glasses and let your hair down. The sexiest.
Oh, it happens. I'm having one.
It happened, yeah.
I'm having one.
I let my copious hair down.
So, the cold open is insane. We're in Detroit on the factory line.
Not even 5 minutes into the movie, we get the first victim.
Well, okay,
we get two victims.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I'd like to take a moment and
sit right there. Tell you a little story.
No, the opening was perfect, in my opinion. Because it starts out a black screen, a car ignition, and then it shows the logo, Christine. Mm-hmm. And it shows all the actors, but all you're hearing is just the
engine revs.
The engine, mm-hmm. engine is purring. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's getting you hyped.
Well, and I will.
And then
we open up to Bad to the Bone.
Which,
well, and I will throw it to my lovely friend here, but you're the car person on the podcast.
I guess of the four of us, yes.
Well, but I mean, but just what they do in this, which I think is excellent, is not only is the car a character, but they let Christine speak. Like, you hear that engine, and whoever's doing the Foley work here, the microphone is right there. And so the bass, like you said, before we even get into the movie, it's just a, and it becomes the character in its own right, because not only does she speak through the radio, but the
50s
engine,
pop songs.
That engine, that thrumming of mm-hmm. that engine.
And now it's a whole career. You can be someone who designs and tunes engine noises, but like in this old American, like this car is designed, like I always think Back to the Future. Motor, you don't understand. This is a 1950s car. It would tear through the DeLorean like paper. This thing is a chunk of steel, and it makes it's a sexy sound.
Mm-hmm.
And they emphasize this the whole time.
I did kind of miss John Carpenter directed this. This was the thing he did immediately after The Thing bombed. So I have a feeling this was more, okay, my last movie failed. I need to make some money. Stephen King is popular. I'm doing this adaptation of his work. I miss some of his touches, though, like his score. You kind of get that John Carpenter synth a couple times, but mostly it's just old Little Richard songs.
I agree with you. I do like the 50s soundtrack, because then, like the Jaws theme or something, it's a trigger. But there's no one on a synth going, wah, wah, wah.
Well, they were selective about the John Carpenter synth, the electronic,
yes,
if you will. It really only happened when Christine was stalking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It really only happened when Christine was murdering. Okay.
Which I love.
Spoiler.
It was beautiful. Well, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is about a murderous car.
So you know that movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Imagine if Jeffrey Dahmer built Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
So remember at the end of Grease when they fly off in the car?
This is what happens.
But instead, it lands on people. Yeah. And then you have...
But no, I mean, it was a nice contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, because the rest of the movie, you know, you do have classic rock, mm-hmm. you know, like rock and roll classics. And then when it's horror time, you get that John Carpenter electronic music. And I appreciate that.
Well, and Charlie and I were talking about this earlier. Excuse me. My confusion about the dates and stuff. This is set in 1978 for the most part.
Yep.
But what's interesting then is the 1980s was so obsessed with the 50s. Again, I already mentioned Back to the Future.
Yeah.
But like, so what's interesting here is I bet you on the oldie station, you would hear all these songs. So as a audio trigger, it works very well. And so like these big cars and this like the sexy interior and all these kind of, you know, and again, it's still John Carpenter and Halloween is happening the next block over,
yeah.
right? And so you have this like these wide streets, these 80s cars, and then this one car that is dramatically sexy in 50s.
The movie takes place the same year as the original Halloween. I'm not sure if that's just when the book was published as well, maybe, but I thought that was a nice touch.
I think that's fake because everyone would still be talking about Star Wars.
Oh.
But I mean, even Chris Pine here, his friend, is driving like a, what is it? It's a Mustang, right?
No, that's what the bad guy was driving.
The bad guy's in the Charger, what's the blue right? car? It's a Charger.
Yeah.
It's a Charger.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the Karen mom, who's a real bitch.
Holy cow.
She was something.
I just right from there. Let's just start right there with Karen mom. Fellatio is a word. It is acceptable in the game of Scrabble.
Yes.
I have, you know what? We've all had that perfect Scrabble word, and it might be uncomfortable, but it's a word.
But it's a word. And if you get 24 points and you can end the game, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have
I'll play fellatio against my grandma.
I have a gay cousin, and I love her to death. But when I can play queer on a triple word score, I fucking won that game. And you know what? She's like, and I'm like, you know, and sometimes it just means funny in that it's funny that I won this game. And she was like, well done, doctor.
You managed to win a game of Scrabble? How queer.
Yeah. Fuck you. And I'm turning off your microphone.
Oh, boy.
And so we have one of the most awkward first days of school in human history. So Karen goes, you shouldn't be in my driveway. You're too darn loud.
Noise pollution.
I also like that the main character, who is the, and hopefully, I mean, I'm sure we were all nerds around the table, but there's that one jock who's the friend to everyone. My buddy was Shannon. He actually has a PhD in something practical, like science. So he's a good dude, and but he was on the football team. He helped me through weight training. Good guy.
Cool.
But that's, you know, his buddy, who's a football player, shows up, picks him up, and he is Crispin Glovering all over this place. He brings out the trash. He tears the bag. His mom is like, you are a loser who will never lose your virginity. And he's like, thanks, mom. I am so awkward and I have an erection now. He's a pain pig, as you see. They drive to school on the first day in the beautiful Dodge Charger. And we are...
I never got the sense, though, in any of his other works that John Carpenter's a real car guy. Like David Cronenberg, I could imagine, being a big, like, well, classic cars
remember,
fan.
Remember, Carpenter signed on because he needed a job.
I will say, though,
this was not a passion project.
It made me want to watch, not anyone you're thinking, a George Lucas movie, because that's what American Graffiti is.
Yes. Yep.
This is like, because that's what this.
Cars and Music.
Yep.
Cars and Music. And if you have not seen it, first of all, stop everything and watch this, but also watch that. Like, there's something, and I teach high school now, like Stephen King did, which is why Carrie is both creepy, and I totally get it.
What's the deal with, like, Stephen King high schools? They always are like, everybody's slightly too old, and the teachers are way too eager to, like, punch other students.
Masturbation fantasy. I mean,
Well, no, he's writing horror.
He is, and let's just be clear. High school is where emotions are heightened to the millionth degree.
Yes.
Because, like, nowadays, if I have a falling out with a friend, it's a lot more passive-aggressive. It's a lot more, like, why aren't they responding to blank? In high school, I was never shoved in a locker because I'm 6 foot five. But like, there is a lot of like elbowy, active aggression, you know? And again, as someone who observes it as my job, I can see where he comes from in this. And that's what it is. Now, I will say what doesn't happen is a tall, lanky teacher showing around the hottest new girl in school, like, this is marching band. You should join marching band. And all the dudes are like, oh man, bro. This, like, we have a scene out of Beverly Hills 90210 happen where all the guys are just trying to hide there.
Oh, like, every guy is stuck on Chris Tucker. Damn!
Actually, one of the guys who goes on about how he's so fussy about women, but this one's his type, and then he turns around, you see his face, and you're like, I don't know why you're fussy about anything. Prior to that, he is talking about how she's clearly like the hottest thing that's ever walked into this school, and then goes on to say the famous phrase of slut body. And I'm thinking, what am I about to see? I'm looking for like Jennifer's body kind of thing going on. I'm like, Megan Fox is about to walk out. And then I see a woman in shorts that go almost down to her knees and a sweater. And I think slut body meant a different thing. Just to be clear, I'm not slut shaming. I'm very pro slut.
Oh, well, I had the same thought as you, which is that she's wearing like board shorts.
Yeah. Like,
and like just a sweater. And again, no slut shame here, but it's the late 70s, early 80s. What it would be is a tank top or something, anything. Like, and again, it's not saying this girl doesn't even have a figure, but
you can't really see it under these clothes. Yeah. And also, I mean, she's very pretty. I'll give her that. She's very, very good looking. However, I just don't look at that girl and think, yeah.
Slut body.
Absolutely. But the girl that they refer to as a walking sperm bank, that one, she had more of a slut
the blonde
body.
One?
What can I say? I'm a type.
No, but she has like, she's not blonde, but it's like a bleach.
It looks like a bottle blonde. No shame. You do whatever you want, girl.
We'll get to, stay tuned, future episode, Rad. But like Lori Loughlin at the time, like she has like the hair and she has the bod.
Mm-hmm.
It's 80s. It's a bod.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
the actress
I'm going to apologize in the future and the past and currently for a show I used to watch called Drawn Together, but her name would be Marianne Slutsky, right? Like, it's just like the blonde one is just like, I want to S that D. And then he ignores her for the girl who's the brunette. Like, we have the same stylist, so let's...
So the actress is Alexandra Paul. This is probably her most famous movie. She's done a lot of TV work since then.
No kidding.
And she was in Spy Hard, apparently.
Hey! Leslie Nielsen. I love Leslie Nielsen. Stay tuned. So we should cut to the scene. After the awkward, awkward scene where the assistant principal is saying, like, and these are the guys who are going to try to, you know, sexually harass you, they go to our hero. Is like, where's my nerdy friend? Meanwhile, he's in West Side Story. And when you're a jet all the way because he's got a switchblade.
He's got a switchblade.
He does.
And hits right under his fucking throat. It's a strong first day of school.
Yeah, you know, because these things, I mean, I guess the 70s, these things happened.
Well, I mean, that's just the rule about first day of school. You have to rape somebody to establish dominance.
By the way, my favorite thing was...
And we
thank you, Daniel. And as the person who's going to probably edit this episode, you're going to just leave it in for all the laughs.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Prison rules.
So we have, he has like a bunch of little henchmen we'll get to. Several are nameless, but one is in one of my favorite movies.
Moochie.
The guy from Ghostbusters, where Bill Murray is showing cards and there's a hot girl and a dude.
The dude?
And the dude who keeps getting electrocuted. Uh-huh. Is one of the villains.
Oh yeah. My, I did not.
The one who looks like not Rick Moranis? Yeah.
I did not put that together. Good lord.
That guy also, very interesting, during the fight that ensues between our heroes and the greasers, Moochie grabs cool guy Dennis's dick while fighting and then says dick face. And all I could think was, aren't you dick hand then?
Exactly. I didn't get, I mean, I have never seen straight people fight. Sorry. I don't even know how to finish this conversation. Grabbing dicks is something I've really only seen happen in gay bars. You know?
Gay bar.
Gay bar.
Gay bar.
Gay bar.
I feel like maybe I've been fighting the wrong way.
I mean, I'll tell you what, for getting a handful of dick just to like get someone's attention.
That's a good way to say hi.
It definitely leaves an impression.
It's a hand job.
Especially if your name is Moochie. Mm-hmm. Moochie, watch your dick.
Death to Moochie. I mean, I do like the idea that you just grab the most prominent feature of someone and just like, boom, grab, punch. Like, it is a strong opening gamut there. Like, oh.
Well.
Anyway, we get out of the scene when shop teacher shows up after doing a line of love. I don't know how long kids have to be in your classroom in a room filled with, like, tools before you just wander out of the office.
That Schlitz wasn't going to drink itself, Nick.
Clearly. Because he comes up. By the way, everyone is a head taller than this guy, too.
Yeah.
So he's looking up at the guy with sideburns and going, you're an asshole. And also, just in general, bullies suck. We get that. We're here for you. We're here for people, as people who probably all been bullied in our lives.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But you also don't want to be the kid who rats him out. And when he goes, he has a switchblade on him, you're just like, oh, no, 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 no. You're now going to be murdered. And foreshadowing, that's how the movie is going to go until it turns out that your car is magic. Now, if his car wasn't magic, this is a short that shows before another movie because that kid is just fucking dead.
Yeah. No, that's like a PSA that they'd show like in 80s classrooms.
Absolutely.
You see how he grabbed his penis? Mm-hmm. Now, that means he's the dominant.
So Mrs. Reagan goes to address school children. Now, children, what do we say? Snitches get stitches.
I would have loved a scene where the drug cop comes in and just is like scratching. Here's how you tell if you get good skag. And he just opens up the briefcase and he's like, this is a drug-free America. So don't just, you know, if it smells like a skunk's ass, it's the good stuff. Like, and he's like twitching and itching. Because that's kind of how the scene goes. If only that, the guy with the Spock sideburns, who's the bad guy, is clearly done all the blow that Mr. King didn't do before the shooting of this movie.
Oh, well, unlike some other things, I don't think he had any real hands-on thing with this with
he
this
wasn't
murder.
On set. He's yeah. like, I'm done with this. I'm going to go talk about, but what if this time Kennedy didn't die? Like, it's just, I'm having fun. I like.
You
I,
are. I, you really are.
I do like Stephen King.
Yes. Yeah.
Stephen just, King is charming.
Yes, he is.
It's just at this point, his books are starting to get longer and longer and longer. And Christine.
Well, this is around the time where he forgets how to end a book.
And then he never remembered ever again.
And then he never remembered ever again.
Well, I mean, he was kind of prescient in writing this book, considering he was almost killed by a van.
Which is one of the big Misery.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To wit.
Oh, no, that's a great Stephen King movie, Misery.
Absolutely.
But the reason we didn't schedule it is because then I'd have to watch it again. And I love it, but
it's a hard watch. The Hoblin scene's a rough one.
It's a hard watch.
It's a hard watch. And everyone should see it. It's incredible.
Kathy Bates deserved her Oscar.
Yes.
She did. Just like about Schmidt when she's naked outside the hot tub.
Get out of my head. I was just thinking, at least she wears clothes in this one. So not shaming.
No. Good honor. It's a great scene. But if you haven't seen it, but you don't think you're okay with it, watch the Critic episode based on it, which is the exact same.
Yes.
Great show. The Critic. Anyway, so at this point, after having,
yogurt spilt, bloodshed.
They
stab his lunchbox.
How did mom...
yogurt doesn't do that.
Mom's spaghetti.
No, the fact that mom, as they're pulling out of the driveway, he's walking to Dennis's car, she goes, and try to keep that cold. There's yogurt in there. And I'm thinking, lady, it's 78. Where am I going to keep this? But in my locker?
It's 1978.
Well, first of
high
all,
school.
Yeah.
It's foreshadowing. He goes from a guy who would pull out to not pull out.
We're just breaking Madison on this episode.
And I give credit to Charlie. This is what we call a classic second episode.
I mean, yeah.
But the whole point of all of this is he is humiliated. And so he gets stabbed through the sack and the white stuff comes out and he is...
Are you saying that that's a metaphor?
He's emasculated, right? Because the whole...
I did not even think about that while watching this movie. I didn't
think about that.
Because the whole thing is, it's your senior year. We should get you laid. Is he going to get laid? Nah, he gets stabbed through the sack and it's not going to happen, right?
And his yogurt spills out all over the place.
And he slips in it.
And he slips in it.
That, you know what? That's a Family Guy joke. The only other option would be his clothes shatter off them. He's so stiff. Which is, I think, a literal Family Guy joke. Meanwhile, driving home, in his best attempt, he goes, all things considered, it wasn't a bad first day. They drive past the car, Christine.
Right. Which at this point is like broken down. It's got moss growing on it. It looks ugly.
We call it gilf porn. The only chance he's going to get laid is to have sex with an older woman.
I'm not letting that go. Really? You went there?
I did. Because the only chance he's going to get laid is with this older car.
As a gilf, I take offense.
Well.
Girl. But he buys the car with the money he's been saving up. $300, which, again...
Fucking boomers jack the price of cars. You can't get...
I remember when I bought my first used Prius from CarMax.
Maybe they'll read you Christine with a Tesla that goes berserk on auto driving mode.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I mean, but they are redoing it. Another Blumhouse movie.
Oh, boy.
I mean, the thing to me that sucks about all of this is, ironically... If you had made this 20 years ago, I would have been like, of course, it's hard to get old movies. But now it's easier than ever to get this. Again, I paid $2 on Vudu. Just watch the fucking original, man.
Well, they already actually did kind of remake it. And the maker of this acknowledged that he was inspired by Christine.
Bang, bang.
No. Halloween Ends, the most recent Halloween, is basically this movie. Which Halloween Ends fucking sucks.
Well, I mean, I'm with you. And... It was funny just watching this last night with my wife and all. It's just the pacing of this part, especially, it's just like, well, we were texting about this scene. So when they're driving along, they buy the car from an old man. They're literally cutting through someone's backyard. And he's like, stop the car. Stop the car. And he goes, why? Do you have to take a shit or something? He goes, no. It's a beautiful car. It's a very strange scene. And we're expected, I think, to believe that there's a possession or something. Mm-hmm. Like the ghost
there's
of the car reaches out.
Supernatural going on that draws him in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, and I made the joke earlier, but it's literally the actor who plays Marley from Home Alone.
Yes.
Is there. And you said he's wearing a scoliosis brace. I thought he was wearing a bodice or a corset. And he's like, so you want this car? Whatever his name is.
Arnie.
Buddy Holly just literally climbs into the driver's seat and he's like, it smells like I'm going to get laid in this car. And the guy's like, it'll start.
It's got almost 100,000 miles on it, so that's how you know it's ancient.
Meanwhile, Captain Kirk is saying it's got probably 193,000 miles because it's 20 years old.
But that makes it an antique.
It does.
Officially an antique.
So that I'm very much an antique then.
You're a grandmother.
Yeah.
As you can hear from her elderly voice.
Yes.
It's been 84 years since we started this recording.
And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Metamucil.
I put some Metamucil in my Activia yogurt and then I just shit everything out of me. Mm-hmm.
If you can't drive 55, try Metamucil because nothing will make you go fast. Professional comedian Mick Hoffman. Anyway, so Christine is practically technically it starts and it gives, and again, we mentioned it earlier. If you're a car nut, it's a
good.
Sexy roar.
Yeah.
Right? But it then turns immediately into a car from a Naked Gun movie because the back of it's smoking out of the trunk and it's like limping along. Meanwhile, Karen, his mother.
Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off, Nick, but we missed the best line from this movie.
I'm going to let you say it.
No, I'm not saying it. I'm going to let somebody else say
it. Okay. So my brother brought this car when it was brand new. And the best smell in the world is new car smell, except maybe pussy.
Which every teenage boy wants to hear from the crazy old man down the street about how good the pussy smells.
Yeah.
I remember pussy. Hey, it was during the Kennedy administration. Fresh pussy. And again, remember, this is Marley. This is the guy who kills Joe Pesci in Home Alone. This is, you know, he buried his whole family in salt. There were no bodies.
He also permanently looks like a guy going, oh, why did Hoover lose re-election?
I cry in Home Alone every time he can't see his granddaughter. And then he was talking about, you know, fresh car smells like pushy.
Yep.
And then he just casually talks about how
his brother's
child choked to death in the car. And it's obviously alluded to, although he doesn't say it yet in this part of the movie, that his brother also died because of the car. Like, the car is responsible for his brother's death as well.
It never really
explains how Christine kills people in the car, though. I wasn't clear on how that happens.
So one of the things that I didn't love about the movie is that they started it out with the conceit that Christine is evil from the beginning. She's bad to the bone. She was born bad, blah, blah, blah.
And she's red.
Blah, 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 blah. The book, however, basically, it's LeBay gets so obsessed with Christine that he awakens something in her and starts to do evil things that tied his spirit to it. And he was trying to intentionally sacrifice his wife and daughter to be receptacles for, like, Christine's spirit. It was very weird.
So Christine's a Horcrux then?
I don't know. Something like that. But the point is that LeBay, the original owner, is largely some of the guiding force. He's possessing Arnie. Arnie becomes more like him. They compare his signature. Signature of Arnie versus LeBay is exactly the same after he buys the car. So it's one of those things where it makes a little more sense.
In the book than the movie.
In the book than the movie. But in the movie, you just have to accept the car is evil, the car has magical powers, and the car can just make you choke.
I will also state for your argument here, I wish it was either more clear or less clear.
Yeah.
Because, like, if it was like you were saying, rather than, like, then we see the car drive off the factory line, and then he uses it to, like, kill the rival of, like, they're fighting over the same girl, and then the rival dies. Or it's completely vague the whole time, and then who's actually killing these people? Is it the car or the kid? Either way is better.
Yeah.
Now, again, I like this movie, but that's what drives it up into being a more solid horror. Because immediately when it's driving on its own, we know the kid's not inside.
And how do we know? Because the windows are all black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of love that.
I do too.
Because it's also like special effects 101, but also now when you're watching it, it's like 4K. Like, I'm sure if you're watching an old, like, shitty VHS tape, you couldn't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. But when you're watching it and there's like, my screen adjusts for HDR. No. You're like, everything else is kind of gray. Those are black windows.
Yeah.
It's very clear. They might as well be driving with a periscope. And we were talking every single King movie. I'm sure we're going to talk about practical effects. 80s were better. There was a dude in there. He was wearing all black. And he was like, they can't see. It was the Stig.
It was the Stig's evil cousin. The Stang.
The Stang. And then there was two in the Stang. But.
Oh, goodness.
I'm going to break all of you.
And scene.
But anyway. Along here, we should also mention our hero, Chris Pine, gets injured.
I love that you keep calling him Chris Pine.
He looks like Chris Pine. I'm sorry. Our hero, Smarty. Is Artie and Smarty?
No, Dennis.
Dennis.
Who looks like he gets his hair cut by a Flobee.
Yeah, and credit where credit's due. It's played by John Stockwell, and he's an actor who
he says, was in Top Gun, Blue Crush,
Into the Blue as the director. He directed Blue Crush. In fact.
Oh, he directed. Oh, yeah.
I mean, and he's good in this. I have no complaint.
Blue Crush, by gar, it's been a while.
And he's in the TV show, the TV series Friday the 13th. But if you want to listen to us talk about him in a previous episode where I sing, Jeremy Reigel sings, and Matt Quinn sings, you need to watch the Top Gun episode.
Yep.
Where we sing Danger Zone as the end credits.
Yes, we did. I blew the note during my segment.
Yeah,
did not sing that part right.
We did it with we were doing Rock Band, and I just recorded all four of us singing it. Each of us got a verse, and we all sang the refrains together.
Mm-hmm.
It's as someone who was in it, I'll tell you, it's hard to listen to my voice sound so incredible.
It was pretty incredible hearing Matt sing.
And at that point, Madison stopped being on the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna oversell it, but she stopped showing up after that point. We should mention that once he gets the car, he gets possessed by it.
He gets the dark circles under his eyes, which means, and, you know, he's turning evil.
And well, he stops wearing the glasses.
Yeah,
he's Spider-Man.
His vision corrects.
His mom says, he can't park that piece of garbage at my house. I don't know what that was. So he parks it at this garage where people work on cars.
It's owned by that dude.
No, that's a total thing.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's owned by the old man from Last Action Hero.
That's where I knew him from.
Yeah.
The character's name,
Robert Prosky.
Robert Prosky,
and he's good, yeah. And he's just a bloviating fat like
cigar chomping.
You want to do that? It'll cost you an extra $20 a month. Like it's perfect. He's
clearly a guy
camp for fat kids.
Clearly a guy that's in witness protection.
Oh. Hank Hill is the next.
Nah.
Henry Hill, excuse me.
Yes.
Yeah, the Henry Hill. And at this point, like, the possession takes place because he no longer wears his glasses. He becomes cooler. He wears the sweater that Leslie Nielsen will later wear to murder his wife's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. And he starts dating
Marianne Slutsky.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the problem is, our hero, the good guy,
is out of this movie for a long time.
Well, but we should talk about the scene.
Yeah.
Because he's running for the touchdown, misses the fact. He's so obsessed that his buddy is making out with the new girl rather than the blonde girl who's throwing herself at him, that he not only misses the pass, but is paralyzed.
Oh, no. He
came close.
Yeah. They said one more centimeter and he would have been paralyzed.
It's strong wording. Stephen King was ahead of the curve as far as like traumatic brain injury. This was important stuff. But I paused the movie at this point because in the hospital, you know, Captain Kirk is there. Milhouse is looking at him with a sexy sweater. And behind Captain Kirk is just a card that says,
ouch. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
It's a yellow card that just says, ouch, in blue. And I'm just like, Hallmark nailed it this day.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the more interesting or humorous things I was thinking about during this scene is like, he would not be in like an actual hospital bed in 2023. They would be like, here's your aspirin, get the hell out.
Yeah.
That's right. No, you're 100% right. And then you go play football.
Yeah.
And Neil says those Danish cookies that are always filled with knitting materials, but they're actually...
I was excited to see that actual cookies were in there.
That's right.
I was trying to figure out, how did I know Robert Prosky? And y'all mentioned a couple of things that he was in. Grandpa Fred from Gremlins 2.
Oh, yes.
Previous episode where Hulk Hogan shows up and goes, you Gremlins, you get out of here. People are here to watch their movie and eat their popcorn. You Gremlins, get out of here. Oh.
Solid episode. Yeah,
anyway. Man.
The king of the chin beard. The great, neck beard. He's a neck beard.
A lot of great character actors in this movie.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, it's really good. It's actually, I think this is a really good movie.
I enjoyed it.
Every year, my wife and I do, you know, Halloween upright. Yeah. You know, it's October. You got to do it because I'm also a sentimental soul, so I like Christmas movies. And that happens the second week of November. So, We usually pick one series that either one of us has not watched, and then we pick your smatterings. this is one that I will just put in the rotation because it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's become a cult classic over the years. I mean, people watch it because it's a murderous car.
I just wish more people talked about it.
And the practical effects are amazing.
They are.
John Carpenter was the master of practical effects. I mean, he's more or less completely retired now, isn't he?
He plays games and makes music. Like he's living his best life.
Yeah.
But the thing about this movie is the budget doesn't make sense to me anymore because movie budgets are weird. But this movie is made on the cheap, and it's very practical. Because we keep mentioning his previous movie is The Thing. That's an expensive movie comparatively. This is a bunch of teenagers, but its practical effects for the most part is just like, well, it's going to rain in this scene.
They had to smash a lot of cars, though.
And there's just like a
yeah.
And there's a clicker that says, now the radio's on. Guess what? That radio dial's green.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking A, dude. And it's creepy. And you just, and you play like something by the Righteous Brothers. It gets 30% creepier. And then all of a sudden, that BJ is turning into choking on a hamburger in the drive-in theater.
Which is a scene later when Arnie takes Lee to the drive-in, and she hates Christine. She views it as competition. And I think they actually address that. Like, she says that.
Uh-huh.
He says something to the effect of, most girls get jealous over other girls, not cars. And she goes, well, Christine's a girl. And then she starts slapping the seat like a sassy little girl.
Can you spank my seat?
And then, of course, he gets all uptight about it. Don't do that. Don't you hit Christine.
Because he's going crazy.
That's when you know he's gone creepy.
You guys, ladies and gentlemen who listen to this podcast, you should look it up. But there's an SNL sketch that's like the Plymouth fuckable. And there's like a vagina on the back of the car. And so you just see the male SNL characters humping the car. And then someone else tries to show up and hump the car. And then the car alarm goes off. SNL in the 90s was a strange place.
Yes, it was. A lot of O.J. Simpson jokes.
Yeah, that was the dark times. We don't talk about that period of SNL.
Well, Chris Farley was on SNL then.
We can talk about it. We don't talk about Leno at the time.
It can't hurt us anymore. It's okay.
David Spade. The Hanukkah song.
Goat Boy. Jason Brewer's best character, maybe. Is that that?
I think that's yes, that
guy's
the only
one.
Yeah. Anyway, we should mention... I mean, we should mention
Christine tries to kill Lee, and that's where I was getting confused.
With the burger.
Yes.
Right. I wasn't really sure, though, how Christine was doing that.
Then the dude Lebowski shows up in the sweater and just starts grabbing her by the tits and going,
it was a very sexual Heimlich maneuver.
Mm-hmm. He saves her, but he's also, like, he does. I mean, he properly gives a Heimlich maneuver, and then at the end he just goes,
Yeah, like, he was definitely touching her boob at the end.
That was some creepiness right there.
Probably the scariest thing in the movie right there.
Because, like, literally, she spits out the burger and he puts the hands up like, you're okay, smack.
And then just, like, continues bringing his hand down. I'm like, wow, that's a bold move.
And at the end...
Let's see if it works out.
And again, like, at the end, the guy goes, I guess he saved you, didn't he? And you're just kind of like, but also kind of... Who's the hero in the scene? We gotta get out of here.
Lee is the hero. Lee. She's our own hero.
Meanwhile, Adam Driver just shows up and he's like, I know I'm wet, but what is wrong with you in my car? And it's strange.
Oh, that phone call where he's chewing her out and it starts with him trying to win her back, but then by the end he's calling her a bitch.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely like high school man behavior.
I was like, yes. Oh, this is the incel chapter.
Not every dude in high school did this, but I guess I just dated all of the ones that did. They all very much like to do the, hey, I know I just want to start this call by telling you that I love you and we should get together again, but if you're not reciprocating to that, then fuck you, bitch!
I also have Marianne Slutsky's phone number.
And it's wild.
It's an 800 number. It costs $3.95 a minute.
There I am on a payphone dialing numbers until.
Hand in my pants. It's really awkward.
Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed at the Little League fields anymore.
I just thought it was interesting that scene in particular that we're talking about Arnie calling Lee and trying to, like, you know, I guess try to win her back for 10 seconds and then decide to turn into an asshole. Right before that scene, he's talking to that cop in the parking lot who he not even vaguely threatens him by revving his car at him.
Oh, is this? Yeah. Well, what happens is the Switchblade guy and his goons go and trash Christine, and then Christine repairs herself.
And I think you're talking a little bit later.
No. He's right.
It's like literally the next scene.
Yeah.
Because he's a jet all the way.
Someone took a shit on my dashboard.
Well, shit can be wiped off. Mm-hmm. Which, what an interesting remark to that.
Yeah.
Although, we should mention just here how that scene goes. Because, again, there's not really music unless it comes out of Christine, mm-hmm. right? So, what happens is he's parking it in the garage. They sneak in while he's essentially closing the garage door behind him. And then it practically is a scene out of a musical because he's like, I have the sledgehammer. And the guys around him, like, snapping. And, like, they're smashing stuff. The guy from Ghostbusters has a smaller hammer because he's not the leader. So his penis is smaller.
Of course.
And then we have the fat guy with the knife. And I'm calling him the fat guy because he just looks like Artie Lang. And it's the 80s, so everyone's on cocaine. But he's slightly bigger than the rest of them. And
he does look like Artie Lang.
He does. But they're hammering stuff. They're smashing stuff. And midway through, the radio comes on. They smash the radio. But then you realize, like, it would be cool if the entire rest of the movie, it was non-sentient. And that was the moment we first realized it was a sentient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just a note. And me giving notes to John Carpenter is like a grammar Nazi on Facebook. But at the same time...
Well, we know Mr. Carpenter is a big fan of ours who listens to every episode in between his watching basketball games. And
if you told me he was the greatest person on Diablo 4 at this point, I'd believe you. Like, he screams to me, someone who's like, I have a new hobby in my older age. I'm on And you're just like,
yeah.
And he's like, I'm turning all of your pop songs into synth music. And that's just his TikTok. I'd watch that. Yeah, I would too.
I'd watch Joan Carpenter's TikTok.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, at this point, we see Christine in tatters. It's not even Antiques Roadshow.
No.
It's the beginning of a Top Gear episode. And they're about to fix
or
her
the,
up.
Or the end of a Top Gear episode. It's either the beginning or the end. Depends on who's driving.
It's either way.
If Richard Hammond was driving, it's the end of the episode.
They've tried to drive across America. And guess what? It turns out the big chicken was the best thing they saw. meanwhile, his girlfriend wearing all the beige is offset by the fact that now he's wearing red because that's Christine's color. And he's more attached to her than the lady. And that's why they're wearing different colors.
Mm.
Semiotics.
All right, there you go.
I like as he's showing love to the car, it starts to heal itself as though it's a Care Bear or a Transformer. I don't know what to tell
great,
you.
Great practical effect. I mean, it's, you know, it's clear that they smashed a car and they're just running the film in reverse, but it still looks great.
It's good.
It gave me kind of a Who Framed Roger Rabbit feel to it.
A little bit.
Yeah. That's definitely what I got. I mean, I felt like this is giving me that kind of vibe. I also think it was interesting that that when Arnie and Lee are going to the garage and they discover what's happened to Christine, he doesn't get like physically violent, like he hits her, but he does something like she's trying to hold his hand and he's like wrenching it out of her hand. It gets kind of forceful with her. And I think that's definitely, if you weren't sure up to this point, you can definitely tell that Christine is having some kind of major effect on him.
Yeah.
Well, and the next scene nails it because that's he yells at the...
And didn't he also call her a sinner?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
But yeah.
Earlier in the movie, he said something about how she was just sexually frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But he's like, get away from me, sinner, or something like that. And I'm like, okay, that's a choice.
Well, and we should... I mean, from here we can get to, because he also then corrects his parents in the next scene.
They offer to buy him a new car, and he says, no, I want Christine. And his dad goes to try and discipline him, and he physically...
Grabs him by the, like...
It chokes him out.
Yeah,
chokes
him out. But But like, again, this is Carpenter, so we should just talk about for a second how good the filming is.
Yeah.
Because our hero is wearing all red, but it's like he's wearing a black turtleneck under a red button down. The mom is neutral-ish, so she's wearing mustard yellow, and ketchup and mustard just don't go together. But she's wearing like kind of a dark cardigan over it. The dad is wearing the same color cardigan with a white undershirt. And he's like, they beat up Christine. And the mom's like, you know, we've been talking and you should replace Christine. And she's been like, and I mean this with all respect because it's an 80s movie, but she's been a real bitch the whole time. And the dad's like, you should listen to your mother because I have a mustache. And he grabs him by the fucking throat.
Yep.
And the beginning of this is that the parents are stepping on him.
Yeah.
But he goes too far. The like the interesting thing about this is there's no gray area. Like there's not like a Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween to be like, I'm the moderate one. Who is the moral point?
They're showing the extremes here. You know, at the beginning he was total milquetoast. Everyone was walking all over him. His mother was just like completely running roughshod. Now the tables are turned, and of course, after his big fight with his mom and dad, he goes back to Christine, and all of a sudden he says, show me.
Well,
and that's when the magic happens.
Christine repairs a piece of her engine while his back is turned, and then he's like, yeah, show me. Repair yourself. Show me. And there you go. And then she goes on a murderous rampage against the people who beat her up.
Maybe this is like her version of I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Less,
that's a nice pull there, Madison.
That's a good one. But yeah, no, I mean, first up is Moochie. She cut him in half.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Death to Moochie.
As we learn from Harry Dean Stanton, who is in this movie.
They had to scrape his legs up with shovels.
Yeah,
as you do with shit.
Great line. Great line.
Fun, interesting note. Apparently, John Carpenter didn't make the movie R-rated enough, like with enough sexiness and stuff like that. He didn't want any like big Hollywood. He just wanted a straight movie. And the way the studio got the R rating that they wanted for this
with
horror
movie, with the F-bombs.
Yeah, it was basically all the swearing.
Yeah.
They ramped up the swearing.
I really didn't expect that, especially, I mean, I understand this movie was filmed in the 80s, but it's set in 78.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a really bold move to tell both of your parents, fuck you. Like, look, the ball's on Arnie here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it would also be different if that was the one F-bomb.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because like
throughout the whole movie, it's just like curse after curse after curse.
Which again, who cares? But it's just you could do without it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a bloody movie.
But that's what I feel like that's what teenagers do. Teenagers use curse words way more often than they need to because they're like trying to be cool and adult. Mm-hmm. But then when you become an adult and you develop a drinking problem, then you just use fuck like a comma and it just comes naturally.
Well, that's why don't force it. Like if I I'm not saying that this movie would make a financial difference if it was PG-13, but that would be the thing. I'd say, like, use the one when he's swearing at his parents.
Yeah.
My favorite, though, is when he kills Crunchy here. The car's too big for the alley, so it crushes itself down just to kill him. It's a good choice. I don't know how it reads in the book. And then
I do think exploding the gas station was a little much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
No. The flaming Christine
was such a great image.
It was a beautiful image, just classic. But running down, what's his name?
Repperton.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah.
Repperton.
Yeah. Repperton.
Buddy.
Yeah.
That was amazing, and like, it's you see him running down the middle of the road. Which, by the way, if you've got a murderous car,
get off the road.
Run down the middle of a road.
Well,
go places the car can't go.
Like upstairs.
Yes.
There upstairs. You go.
Over a curb.
A tree.
Exactly.
Anything.
Exactly.
I like how the next scene, though, is like
water.
Visiting his buddy in the hospital, and he's like,
isn't he drinking beer?
Yeah. Yeah, drinking beer in the hospital. I expect him to smoke a cigarette.
He brought a
sixer. He's
like, I mean, it was a hospital in the 70s.
They probably just handed those out when you walked in.
It was happy hour. He didn't bring it. It was just the nurses. Here's
your six pack and a pack of cigarettes. Have a good time.
But yeah, no, that scene with the Flaming Christine that had like the best John Carpenter electronic music. Yes. Though for a moment there, I wasn't sure if I was watching Christine or Tron.
Visit Disney World, our newest sponsor. The Magic Kingdom, the new Tron.
And then Christine goes back to the garage and the owner thinks somebody stole it.
Yep.
So he goes to get them out and there's no one in the car.
Right.
And then he decides to sit in it.
Just make himself at home.
And then Christine crushes him.
It's like what happens when my wife drives the car and I sit in it and I'm like, oh no, the electronic seats. No!
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that is the thing. It's like, as soon as this happens, then again, Christine self-repairs. And this is the point at which everyone starts to realize something's up because Lee saw that car destroyed.
Dun, dun, dun,
and
dun.
Now it's not.
Dun, dun,
so
dun, dun, dun.
Lee and Dennis, they share notes. They start to compare stories. Dennis provides all the information about the car's history. And she provides the information about the weirdness that she's experienced.
Well, and we should mention around here is where Harry Dean Stanton is introduced as the detective.
Yep.
And so next to Christine is a white Porsche. And then out of behind the car, Harry Dean Stanton shows up. So, you know, there's a bunch of dead kids.
So did anyone else notice this? Because this may have just been me and my particular quirks. None of the cars were actually parked correctly in the parking spots.
No, I was like, why? When they cut to that scene when he's out in that parking lot before we see the detective, I said to myself, wow, great parking job, dickface. And here we are.
It genuinely bothered me. That was the real horror story.
Dude, I was oof.
And then he did
in
not.
The 70s,
and then he's
there were no parking regulations. So it was free for all.
It was also very funny when he laughs and says, "Lee's not my girlfriend."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm sorry, Lee's not good enough for you. Okay, cool.
I've been fucking my car for weeks.
You know.
Ooh, now I'm getting.
He could have been on an episode of My Strange Addiction. There was that guy in love with his car.
Oh, I'm now just thinking,
and it was red too.
I'm just now thinking of Palme d'Or winner Titan. If you ever saw that. Which a woman has sex with a car and gets pregnant.
I have seen that movie. And I didn't. So that movie was hard for me because I didn't realize that she was having sex with the car.
Yep.
For some reason, I just assumed there was another person in the car. So when she eventually gives birth at the end of the movie, I'm like,
to Hot Wheels?
Yeah, I'm like, none of this makes any sense. What's happening?
So her lactating motor oil didn't.
I just assumed that it was some kind of like weird drug thing. I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't know. I didn't really know what was happening in that movie. I was.
What movie is this?
Titan.
Okay. That seems weird.
It is.
But she does kill a guy in a really cool way in the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
In the ear.
In the ear.
Ayo.
Alrighty. I think we can bring this home.
I think so at this point.
Yes. So basically, you know, after Lee and Dennis, they compare notes. Basically, they decide, okay, Christine's got to go. She has completely taken over Arnie.
Bitch, be cray.
It'd be completely cray. So they hatch this plan.
Wait, if only to mention, just quickly, they kill the other bullies.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Oh, yeah, they're all dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean.
But we should talk about that part because that is a really cool.
We did. We mentioned the fat guy.
We mentioned the gas station. We didn't go into how cool it is when she slams into Repartin's car and then is attached to it. That was great. Sorry. Anyway.
No, please. just to mention the fact that the one guy who's running the Circle K at the time, waiting for Bill and Ted to show up, is like, hey guys, what's going on?
Yeah.
He explodes, the car explodes, everything explodes.
And they show that explosion like at least 5 times.
From 3 different angles.
Of course.
And then the villain is running down the road, and then he gets tagged, which... Mm. Again,
by the Flaming Christine,
and then his whole body is on fire too, which is great.
It's like he's running, and then it cuts to a scene where you see the back of the car, and all of a sudden there's just this flaming body.
Mm. Well, and again, the guy who gets tricked by Bill Murray and the loser are just like, what if we shortstop him? How do you defeat a car? And they're just
like, Zoink Scoob, how do you defeat a car?
Did no one think to put sugar in her gas tank?
I mean,
or slash her tires?
If it became a Revenge of the Nerds, like, sexy thriller, better and different movie.
Banana in the tailpipe, that'll stop
him.
Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Eddie Murphy.
Take the dipstick out.
Girl. But, like, he just crushed, like, I only mention it because if this was a standard Carpenter movie, this is the catharsis. The bad guys are getting their comeuppance, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. But the real comeuppance involves a forklift.
How did that high school boy know how to, first off, operate that heavy machinery? Well, and two, knew where all the switches and where they, but, what they did?
Okay, so this is, girl, this is where it gets fun. This is where it gets real fun.
This was fun.
Like, Dennis goes and using a screwdriver just scratches onto the hood of Christine Darnell's tonight.
The garage.
Yeah, the garage. And then he and Lee plan, we're gonna, like, you're gonna be the bait, and because Lee's gonna be the bait, and of course, as you pointed out, this high school student who has clear understanding of how to use a forklift, though it is the 70s, so I can sort of maybe see that.
Shop class was much intense.
I'm certain that in the 70s, there were forklift operators going to high school.
Oh, I absolutely believe that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, different time.
Carter's America.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowadays,
people know how to use Nintendo Switches. Back then, forklifts. So they hatched this plan. Christine, of course, shows up early or is hiding in the junkyard under some junk.
Is that Pulp Fiction scene in the middle? Right, like they're gonna destroy the wolf has shown up.
Yep,
here's how you get rid of a car.
Yeah, so they're like they keep smashing into it with the forklift.
Arnie's
you think that Christine's driving by herself, but Arnie's inside.
Yes,
that's right. And we also should mention that the blonde, like Marianne Slusky, is long gone. Meanwhile, we have the brunette who's like, I'm so in love with you, vaguely handicapped football player. We should destroy my ex-boyfriend's car. Then maybe question mark.
Like, well, then, like, basically, you know, she runs into the office to get away from Christine, and she's hiding under a Tony Lama sign, which I noticed that.
I did too.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Christine slams into the office, and of course, Artie goes flying out the window.
And he has this big, and he dies.
And he dies with a piece of glass in him. You would think that she would have him wear a seatbelt. Interesting.
It's more fun with that protection.
Yeah,
giggity.
Oh, you
giggity. That was good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Also, it's a car from the 50s. It might have just been all steel.
Yeah, like seatbelts.
They didn't believe in seatbelts back then.
That's commie talk.
Choose who will live and die. If you die, you're a communist.
But yeah, after he dies, she still is able to heal a little bit.
Christine.
It's clear that she's not as powerful.
And then in the sequel, she falls in love with Winnebago.
But anyway, they literally drive over top of her with this.
And flatten it so much it gets turned into like a cube.
Well, and that's the thing. They're looking, and that's the post. Stephen King, you always got to have the last little scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Where something creepy happens, whether it's, you know, Carrie, where, like, you know, the hand reaches out of the grave, or...
And then Samuel L. Jackson invites her to join the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. She's been compressed. And, of course, you hear Bad to the Bone, and there's a little twitch and the metal moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it goes to black.
But before then, we start hearing a 50s song, and Lee turns to Dennis with this look of horror on her face. And then it just, this is perfect. Just some guy walking through the junkyard with a boombox. And looks at them like they're weird. Like
they're the weirdo.
And they're like, oh, thank God. And then,
Yeah.
And then just bam, 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 bam. I'll just say, the last 20 minutes of this is, it just slaps. It goes so quick. It's crazy.
It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carpenter is a great filmmaker and definitely knows how to make tense scenes.
Since we'll do this all over the place, but I'll give my final thoughts first. We'll wrap it up here, and all then right. We'll end on Madison. You can end.
You had the final word.
Oh,
you
get
the
final word.
So for me, I hadn't seen this before, but if you do not know what A, King is, or B, Carpenter is, if you don't know Carpenter, start with Halloween, the first one.
Yes.
But otherwise, this is a perfect entry into the King saga. If only it's not crazy, it's not over the top, it's exactly what an 80s horror movie should be. It's silly, but also there's some good deaths. It's practical effects. It's a lot of fun. And what's important for an 80s movie, the soundtrack. So many modern horror movies, it's a lot of like atonal music. This has cues. It has actual points of reference. And the sound comes back in non-traditional ways. It's a lot of fun. There's like about 75% less tits than you'd expect in an 80s movie. But other than that, it's a blast and a half. Charlie, what's up?
When I was younger, I loved horror movies. My parents didn't love that I loved horror movies, but I loved horror movies. This was one of the few horror movies they let me watch because in their eyes, it wasn't quite as scary. And there was no sex. There was no like gore. There was nothing like that. So here I am, like, you know, like 8, 9, 10, watching this movie because it's the best thing out there and it's the horror that I can get.
Sure.
I loved it. It was amazing.
It's not bad, certainly. Carpenter is too talented. I just think it was missing a lot of his passion that he has in his best stuff. Like in The Thing, you can tell that he was in love with that material and expanded it well beyond the original short story. Here, it really just feels like John Carpenter, because The Thing had bombed, he needs a paycheck. And I think that's kind of the approach he was taking. It's like, this is Stephen King's popular. I can make this. I can have a hit under my belt. And so there's, he's, again, it's very well made. The effects are great. And if you've seen all the other King stuff, it's worth checking out. I just don't think it's as good as some of Carpenter's other stuff.
I think that's fair. I like the movie. It was a good time. I appreciate good 80s horror like this because of what we've talked about, practical effects. I love I need campiness. If you're not going to be outright terrifying, you got to be campy for me. Do want to make mention of this because this is a fun little thing my husband pointed out when we were watching this movie together last night, which was he is curious if Christine talking through the radio in any way influenced how Bumblebee talks through his radio.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And so that one's for you, baby. And I just want to wrap this up with, it was fun. I had a good time. If you like Cars or you don't like Cars, I think you'll like it anyway. And to quote my favorite walking sperm bank, TTFN.
So thanks for listening. Thanks for following us. I will just drop here. Next week, we're covering The Fog, which is another just classic old school 80s and
another John Carpenter piece.
Another John Carpenter piece, which, again, hits all the buttons for me. So if you have not yet, please, please, please leave us a review wherever you listen to us because that helps new people find the show. I appreciate all of you for doing what you do to make us continue to be popular somehow. We're in our 10th season. It makes me feel good that people still listen and still find the show every week. So thanks, everyone.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. From incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.